Good morning. Today is Wednesday, December 17th, 2025. This is a regular meeting of the Abatement Appeals Board. I would like to remind everyone to please mute yourself if you're not speaking and silence all electronic devices. The first item on the agenda is roll call. Vice President Newman.
Here.
Commissioner Calamucci.
Here.
Commissioner Lee.
Here.
Commissioner McLeese.
Here.
Commissioner Williams.
Here.
Commissioner Ming is excused and Commissioner Alexander Toot is expected, and we have a quorum. Next, I would like to have our land acknowledgement. Anyone would like to read the land?
The Abatement Appeals Board acknowledges that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As the indigenous stewards of this land and in accordance with their traditions, the Ramaytush Ohlone have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caretakers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in their traditional territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on their traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramaytush Ohlone community and by affirming their sovereign rights as First Peoples.
Okay, thank you. the next item is the oath. Will all parties giving testimony today please stand and raise your right hand? Anyone who's speaking today? I mean, that's just wording. Whoever's going to speak, whoever's going to come up here and talk. Sorry. Do you swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth to the best of your knowledge? Okay, thank you. You may be seated. Thanks. Sorry about that. Okay, for everyone in attendance, the order of presentation is that the department will present its case first, then the appellant. Each side has 7 minutes to present. Next, there's public comment, and members have 3 minutes each to speak. And lastly, there's rebuttal time of 3 minutes for the department and then the appellant. Okay, next we have item B, approval of minutes, discussion and possible action. To adopt the minutes for a regular meeting held on October 15, 2025 and November 14, 2025. Is there a motion to approve both sets of minutes? And is there a second?
Second.
So there's a motion by Commissioner McLeese and a second by Vice President Newman. Is there any public comment on this motion? Seeing none, are all commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, then the minutes are approved. Thank you. Next, we have item C, new appeals order of abatement, discussion and action. Case number 6956, 4757 19th Street, complaint number 202-424-763, owners of record and appellant, Mark Lawton, Crosley Family Trust. Action requested by appellant. Appellant appeals the February 27, 2025 order of abatement and assessment of costs. And staff can come forward.
Good morning. My name is Mauricio Hernandez, and I represent court enforcement for case number 2024-24-24763 for property address 4757 19th Street. The case summary is as follows. The case, this case concerns a failing retaining wall located along the shared boundary between 4757 19th Street, the downhill property, and 46 Eagle Street uphill property. Multiple boundary surveys confirm that the retaining wall is a shared structure crossing the property line. DBI inspection documented visible stress and a significant vertical crack and displacement of the wall leaning downslope toward 4757 19th Street, creating a hazardous condition. As a result, two notices of violation were issued, one under 46 Eagle Street for this portion of the retaining wall system and another for 4757 19th Street. This established that both properties bear maintenance responsibility for ensuring the wall is repaired and maintained in a safe condition. Require corrective action is to obtain a structural engineering report prepared by a licensed engineer addressing the current condition of the wall. Submit to DBI within 5 calendar days. Apply for and obtain a building permit to carry out all corrective measures identified in the engineer's report. Complete all work necessary to stabilize, repair, or replace the retaining wall. Schedule inspections and obtain final DBI sign-offs. As a result of the case, a director's hearing was held, which resulted in an order of abatement with the conditions that all permits required for the compliance of the violation must be completed and final within 30 days. Staff recommendations is to uphold the order of abatement and affirm the assessment cost. Again, sir, there's multiple service establishing that it's a shared retaining wall, which in DBI's process, we can't just write one notice of violation for the uphill property owner. That will be a civil matter for them to address it and how collectively they're gonna work together. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next, the appellant or the representative can come forward.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Elizabeth Breckus with Breckus Law Partners, and I'm representing appellant Mark Lawton Crosley of the Crosley Family Trust, owner of 4757 19th Street. This appeal concerns the director's order, which requires my client to obtain permits and remedy a cracked retaining wall on another property owner's property within 30 days and imposes an assessment of costs. We respectfully request that the board reverse the order because enforcement has been directed at the wrong responsible party. I will make 3 points. 1, the function and cause of the wall. 2, the reason why the neighbor is responsible. And 3, why the order is inequitable and unworkable as applied to my client. First, the retaining wall exists solely to support artificial fill placed on the uphill property at 46 Eagle Street. The wall was already in existence when my client purchased the property in 1989. All competent evidence shows it was constructed to retain fill brought onto 46 Eagle when the property was developed in the 1920s. Critically, the geotechnical report commissioned by the owner of 46 Eagle Street is titled Gurin Residence Wall. It confirms that the yard at 46 Eagle consists of historic fill that was not compacted to modern standards and that this fill has settled and crept over time, exerting lateral pressure on the retaining wall. The report repeatedly identifies the wall as part of the 46 Eagle property and recommends replacement specifically to support the uphill wall and the uphill yard. This is not a wall supporting 4757 19th Street. It exists to retain an artificially elevated yard on the uphill property. Second, the wall in question is part of a 3-part wall surrounding the neighbor's property. And so it is quite clearly and undisputably the neighbor's wall and responsibility. No law requires a downhill owner to repair an uphill neighbor's wall that solely benefits the uphill neighbor's property. It is not a shared wall. The wall has a minor encroachment on the appellant's property, and whether due to mistake by the builder or creep and settlement, adjusting its location from the uphill property owner's property to appellant's property, this did not make it the downhill neighbor's wall, since it only serves the uphill neighbor's desire to have and maintain a raised yard. My client would be fine with the neighbor returning their yard to natural grade, and if he wanted to install a 1-foot wall, that would be all that is needed. The only reason to build the wall as it exists is to benefit the neighbor whose wall it is. The law is that where a property owner alters natural grade by adding fill, the owner must provide whatever retaining structures is necessary to support that artificial condition. The downhill neighbor is not legally responsible for maintaining a wall needed only because the uphill property was artificially elevated. You don't need to be a lawyer to understand the law. The law that governs this matter is developed to assign responsibility based on who built the wall and who benefits from the wall. This is exactly the situation here. The wall is part of a three-part system supporting the neighbor's raised yard. The geotechnical evidence ties the wall's failure to fill, settlement, and creep on the uphill property, not to any excavation or grading by my client. Third, the order is inequitable and practically impossible to comply with as it applies to my client. My client cannot repair the neighbor's uphill wall, estimated to cost $282,000 by the uphill neighbor's estimate 2 years ago. This wall is on the neighbor's property and must be repaired in coordination with the uphill neighbor's three other walls and with care to prevent the neighbor's fill from sliding. The city initially cited the uphill owner at 46 Eagle Street for this wall in 2021, which was correct. The city later changed course after the uphill owner supplied a faulty survey showing the wall over the property line, not by measuring the base of the wall, but by measuring the top of the creeping wall, which slants towards the downhill property. And because the owner then directed a contractor to pull a permit using my client's address without my client's authorization. My client never pulled a permit, never authorized work, and never accepted responsibility for the wall. But after this was done, the city reversed course and issued an NOV directed at my client. The city's current approach effectively forces a retired homeowner living on Social Security to front hundreds of thousands of dollars to repair a wall that overwhelmingly benefits his neighbor's elevated yard and then pursue civil litigation to recover those costs. This is not reasonable or lawful use of abatement authority. The Abatement Appeals Board exists to prevent exactly this kind of misdirected enforcement. For these reasons, we respectfully ask the board to reverse or modify the director's order to remove any requirement that Crosley Family Trust obtain permits or perform repairs on the retaining wall, and vacate the assessment of costs imposed on the appellant. If the board has immediate public safety concerns, or an appropriate alternative order would be to modify the order to require my client to cooperate with reasonable access while directing abatement responsibility to the uphill property that created and benefits from the wall. My client is willing to allow such access and only asks to be named an additional insured on a licensed contractor's policy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on this item? I'm seeing none. There's none. Is there somebody with their hand raised? Looks like somebody's. Hello, caller. Did you have public comment? You unmuted them. Hello. Okay. Oh, hand is taken down. Maybe they raised it on accident. Okay. There's no public comment. Is there a staff rebuttal?
In regards to the process of sharing responsibility, the intent of the department when we identify a violation for unsafe condition in regards to shared retaining walls or retaining walls that, you know, provide boundaries to property lines, we can't cross that line between civil matter. We have to write notice of violation as we see it. So in regards to working together and providing a civil code, doesn't go into the building code. The building code goes based on section 102 for unsafe conditions. And, you know, we established that. We wrote up one notice. The uphill neighbor 46 Eagle has an order of abatement, has a lien. There was a permit at some point that was going through the process on their site, and there was an administrative permit that was going on 19th Street as well so that they can work together. Unfortunately, one of the permits got canceled. The other one was actually an appeal. It seems like the appeal, somebody who appealed that one lost. The permit got reinstated as of September of last year, but hasn't been, there's no action since then. So again, in regards to conditions where property lines or are gonna be in that area, we as building inspectors don't go into that civil matter dispute. So civil codes, we can't really, you know, quote on an NOV, or we can write a notice saying that owners have to work together in regards to solve this issue.
So there is still an NOV applied to the uphill property, to
yes.
46 Eagle?
Yes. Okay. And so there's a lien already in place for that
okay,
property.
So that one's gone into?
Yes.
Okay.
And the only reason this new notice was actually issued was because of the survey showing that they are a share in the surveys. There's three surveys that were provided. I mean, if there's new surveys that are provided and showing different, then by all means, we'll review the case again, and we'll go back out and review the surveys again.
Thank you. My apologies. It seems like the caller for public comment is trying to raise their hand again. Is it okay to try to unmute them? Okay. Mr. Liebig, are you calling for a public comment?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Okay, you can go ahead.
Wonderful. Thank you. I was just calling to support our neighbors on 19th Street. I believe it is unfair for DBI to assess a notice of violation on the downhill neighbor, especially since the uphill neighbor on 46 Eagle. This wall was constructed to support fill on their land. It wasn't the downhill neighbor on 19th Street who eroded their land or excavated that necessitated a wall to be constructed. So it would be unfair for the downhill neighbor to be responsible for the repair or the maintenance of this retaining wall that was built in the 20s. So I support our neighbors.
Thank you. Okay. There does not appear to be any additional public comment. Is there appellate rebuttal?
Yes, thank you. I just want to respond to staff's statement that the survey shows the wall is shared. That's not what surveys show. They show the location of a wall. In this case, there's approximately 1-inch encroachment of that wall coming towards the downhill property owner. That is not a shared wall. Walls can shift due to slope, due to lateral movement, and the owner of the uphill property has submitted a geotechnical report which says exactly that. It says this wall is having lateral shift due to the earth that was placed, the fill that was placed on the other side of the wall. So that just is not a shared wall. And I get it. Staff is not attorneys. They're not well equipped to be able to, read the civil code and look at party walls and make this analysis. But again, this analysis is not complex. It is grossly unfair to say that this is a shared wall when it is extremely tall and only benefits the artificial fill, which the uphill neighbor's own geotechnical report states. It says that's the whole purpose of the wall, and the wall is needed solely for that purpose. So how is my client supposed to reach agreement with this uphill neighbor when my client is perfectly fine returning the uphill neighbor's property to natural grade so that it can be at best, a 1-foot retaining wall with a fence on top? This is just not workable, and it's really unfair. So I ask that you consider that and consider these circumstances and the fact that the city originally made one determination and then reversed course, and essentially go with what the city's original instinct was, which is this wall, which is part of a three-part wall that surrounds the uphill neighbor's property and interlocks on the corners, that this wall is solely for the benefit of the uphill neighbor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Board discussion?
Do we want to acknowledge that?
For the record, Commissioner Alexander Toot is present. Thank you. The commissioners have questions.
I do have a question on the survey. You mentioned 1-inch encroachment. I'm seeing two different surveys, one that shows 2.37 feet over and then one that appears to show 1.7 feet over. I know these are measured from the buttress locations, which are part of the structure. So I'm just wondering where that 1-inch is coming from.
It shifts, and it shifts on the side where the crack is, where there's been the most lateral movement. So I can defer to my clients, but for the most part, it's a very minor encroachment. And then on one corner, it actually becomes slightly more, and that's where the most visible crack is on the property. And if you look, and that's the buttress below ground. If you look at the actual wall above ground, you see that it's a very minor encroachment.
It looks like Commissioner Williams has a comment.
All right, I have a few questions for the appellant. All right, so a couple fact clarifying questions first and then a few argument questions. So first of all, is the appellant disputing that any portion of the wall is on the appellant's property?
No.
There is a portion that crosses over in one corner.
Okay.
Around where the crack is. And it varies from an inch or two up to 8 or 9 inches. To me, the
could creep, speak into the microphone. Thank you.
The creep theory is entirely possible, probable even because of the crack. But to me, it's really clear. I'm an architect. I've done a lot of building. People back, particularly in the 1920s, there's no property line sketched on the ground. They built that, I believe, without an accurate survey or without referring to a survey. They just laid out a wall. Most of it, the vast majority, 90% of the wall, 95% of the wall, is on Mr. Guerin's property. It's clear to me that they just laid it out skewed to the property line, and it crossed over in the corner. It's not parallel to the property line, which is just a building error. They just laid it out wrong. And, you know, it is a wall that surrounds the property, and the vast majority of it is on that property, on his property. That's clearly what they intended to do, but they just crossed over, encroached without any permission that we've ever found from the owner of our house at the time. And, you know, back then things weren't done as accurately as they are now.
Another fact clarifying question. So is the appellant contesting the department's determination that the retaining wall is creating an unsafe condition?
Well, the appellant hasn't had the engineers, and the report that was done by the uphill neighbor. There is a crack. It is a lean. I mean, I think as an architect,
It's the crack is clearly a problem. It's clearly a long-term danger. It's clear to me that if there was an earthquake, when there is an earthquake, that wall is at risk and needs to be either repaired or removed, or replaced or removed, I should say. I'm all in favor of removing it, and as my attorney said, putting in a fence like basically all of our other neighbors along that division between properties. Almost all of them just have fences, and the natural grade is there. Just take it back to the natural grade. It would save probably $250,000 to just take it back to the grade, and he can build decks. And I totally will cooperate with that.
All right.
Commissioner, can you speak into the mic, please?
Sorry. All right. The wall has been there since, was it 1989?
Well, I bought the property in 1989. The wall had been there for 50 years then, by then.
Okay. So the wall's been there for your entirety of ownership. When did you become aware that the wall was on your side of the property?
It was about the time of the first hearing in this room, which was, I believe, a year and a half ago, when Mr. Guerin submitted a survey that I had never seen before. That was the survey that my attorney referred to as having been done without access to our property, and the tilt of the wall was not taken into account. So that survey is clearly inaccurate when you look at the wall itself. We conducted another survey since then, which you have access to. It does, in fact, show the wall in that corner creeping across the property line. The pilasters also are an inch or two across the property line. So I've been aware of it for approximately a year and a half or 2 years.
Okay. And then
And one more thing. When I bought the house, there was a title search done, and there is no reference. There was no reference in the title search to any issue like this and any problem with a structure that might be on my property that I'd be responsible for.
All right, and then legal question for the attorney or for the appellant. So there is a, I think, an argument being made about which law applies. Is there an argument being made by the appellant that Building Code Section 102A doesn't apply in this case?
Well, what we heard from staff is they consider building code, but they don't consider state law. And state law requires an analysis of a party wall. And state law cannot be, you can't change state law based on building code or, for example, the building department's practice. So I believe that it's quite obvious that this is a wall integrated into the uphill neighbor's property by virtue of the three wall system that they have, and that you should consider what the rules are and the law is. And I appreciate not everybody here is, I'm sure we have one attorney, but not everyone here is lawyers, but it's just very commonsensical that you don't just assign somebody a wall just because it was either accidentally built slightly over the property line or it's shifted as a result of creep. Right. So, yes, I think that's correct.
When you say state law, are you referring to the common law rule that is cited in the brief, or is there a California code you're citing to?
There is. And in our actual appeal, we cited the Civil Code 851. I'm pretty sure it's one. And the fact that that would require an analysis of whose wall it is. And that analysis would be looking at, who benefits from the wall, who built the wall. And a lot of times with old walls, you don't really have any, any building records to show you who built that wall. And we don't have those records. However, the fact that it was built on three sides around the property makes it very clear that it was built by the person who developed that property. And so that would be who should be looked at.
So is the appellant arguing that the staff made an error in law in not conducting the analysis required under Civil Code Section 851?
I think first they made the right determination, which is that the uphill neighbor should be responsible. But then I think they reversed course based on two questionable pieces of information. One was an uphill neighbor's survey that was submitted that showed the wall much more over the property because it measured the top of the wall and not the base, and the lean towards our property versus the actual base of the wall. That would be one. And then the uphill neighbor directed his contractor to pull a permit using Mr. Crosley's address. And of course, if the city is seeing that a property owner is saying, hey, it's my wall, I got to make a repair, here's my permit application, it's understandable. But that's I don't know if it's illegal, but it should be. It shouldn't be allowed to have someone else pull a permit on your property.
And to be clear, I had no knowledge whatsoever of that permit being pulled. I never received anything in the mail. He never told me. It was outstanding, apparently, for quite a while, and I had no idea.
All right, I'll stop there since I've been hogging the time. So,
I have one question. I'm not the lawyer. On the crack that formed, I mean, you've been there since 1989. When did you first notice the larger crack, looking at the wall that's to the right, kind of the more visible crack?
So that crack is only visible from my neighbor's yard. The gentleman who called in a little while ago, his property next to mine extends back further, and part of that U-shaped wall on Mr. Guerin's property faces my neighbor's yard. That's where the crack is. That's where you see it separating. There has been no visible crack on the side of the wall facing my property. It's all facing Mr. Liebig's property. So the question, I guess, was when. It was at the time that Mr. Guerin's predecessor was issued an NOV. I believe that's how it went. He sold the house shortly after getting the NOV. Go figure. And that's when I heard about it. I went next door, looked at it, and thought, oh my gosh, this needs to be dealt with. So I have never disputed that.
So maybe this is a question for staff. If that large vertical crack, which to me appears to me the most egregious, is on, not on your property, is there an NOV applied to that? Not to bring in the caller, but you know, shouldn't it be addressed with that property?
Just my understanding.
She was asking a question of staff. You could have a seat and then come back up.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
I guess my question being the main safety concern appears to be on a different part of the wall. Why is that property not in having it applied to them?
Sorry. At the time the inspector wrote up the NOVs, it was their determination to write the NOVs how they see it and the feel. They saw that that retaining wall affected only those two properties. We did ask that, if I recall correctly, at the hearing, the appellant brought it up to our attention, and we asked them if they were willing to open up a new complaint, we'll go out there and do another site visit to actually document how many properties are actually involved. Do we need to write more notices?
So on that statement, is there any visible stress in the wall that is facing 4757
19th? No, not that I recall.
Question for staff. On the exhibit about retaining wall survey comparisons, we note there's these four surveys that have been done. The department relied on 2025 transit land survey. And can you just discuss that a bit more about that survey, you know, and do you take into account the three previous surveys?
So we took into account all surveys mm-hmm. before we wrote up the NOVs, and then we determined, okay, there is a survey showing that a percentage of the wall or a small area of the wall actually it's over the property line. And again, we don't have an or surveyors. So if the appellant would have actually brought up their own survey, which they did, and shows that there is an encroachment or that retaining wall shows that there's a percentage on their side, then we had to write both properties. So that's how we analyze. In cases like this, if we get a survey showing that they don't have any part of that retaining wall, then we'll abate the case, and then we'll just focus solely on whoever owns that retaining wall. But in this case, we had a survey showing there's a portion of that retaining wall that it's part of their property.
And then I guess maybe just a general comment or question. We have an admitted life hazard here. Folks are admitting, like, we've got a wall that does need to be fixed. And so if we go about reversing the order of abatement, how are we going to get this wall fixed? That is a concern of mine.
Thank you. I'm having login issues. And I apologize for being late. Can you just walk me through how many properties have outstanding NOVs on them related to this?
Two properties.
Two properties, yes. Have it. And one is, and the crack is on one side or on two sides? It's on how many different locations is it?
So it's on one side, but if you look, this is, I'm not sure if you're able to look at the pictures. This retaining wall, as the owner mentioned, or the appellant mentioned, that it's from 1920. It seems like it was built with multiple materials. You have CMU block, you have brick, so it's shifting all over the place. So there are some issues out there, but like I said, when our inspector went out there, he focused on where the crack was, where there's a lien on the retaining wall, so he wrote up the notice that, how it was in the field.
And what is the department's policy when they're, I'm trying to understand the policy of the department. That's why I'm a little bit confused right now, is if there is a wall, like what do you consider a shared wall, and what do you consider a wall that is not shared but aligns on properties? Like, what is the department's determine? How does the department determine that?
So that's where the surveys come into play, because, like, again, we're not surveyors, and we don't follow the civil code. It's not like we don't look at it, but we can't really just quote the civil code and say, oh, yeah, this is, you know, benefits the uphill property, so we're not going to write this one. We look at Section 102A, unsafe condition. There is also California code, which actually connects with the San Francisco amendments, which are more restrictive than the California code. And so we looked at life safety. Is that retaining wall has a crack? Is it leaning towards the adjacent property? If it does, then we have to write both properties.
So, but are both, I guess I don't understand, what I'm trying to understand is if something is a few inches into somebody's property, how do they have the legal authority to fix it?
Well, I mean, because if you look at the survey, if it shows that they're actually a percentage, that retainer was actually part of that property line, well, technically, they have to work together to fix it. It's almost like a fence, right? If you build a fence higher than 7 feet, but if you don't realize that that fence or that property line is actually over a couple of inches on one side, then that neighbor kind of owns that fence as well. So when we get complaints for fences as well like that, we write two notices as well. You know, unfortunately, like I said, we're not equipped as surveyors, so we can't really. I mean, we can look at surveys. We can, you know, assess cases based on a survey, and if they give us a new survey showing that it's not affecting or it's not on their side, then by all means, we'll abate the case.
I would just clarify, you know, the department wants the neighbors to work together, and we're relying on the surveys from licensed surveyors. So that's the information we're going on. If this wall was entirely on one property, then it would be the responsibility of that property.
I understand. I'm having a hard time understanding how we issue a notice of abatement on something that somebody is not in control of. On their own of fixing.
Well, so. To correct that wall, they would both have to work together. There would be building permit on each lot.
No, I
does that make sense? Sorry, you'd have a.
On this.
Yeah. I think.
Well, when there's a
Well, often folks don't know that something is shared.
They're talking to the microphone.
Often people don't know something is shared until there's an issue. And in this case, it feels like a technicality or, you know, because it's just an inch or, you know, whatever the case may be. But an inch is an inch is an inch. And, like, we can't necessarily be involved in determining, you know, civil matters. And so we have to, you know, be consistent with how the department has addressed these things before. And so in the past, whenever something has been shown to be in any way a party to another property, the notice goes to both. And so it creates dual responsibility. I know I started to, like, for us to start the discussion, but I have one question. Has anything been done to safe this wall? Has any sort of, like, temporary shoring been put up or anything of that nature just to make sure there isn't additional creep and that the life safety issue is at least temporarily mitigated?
As far as the department is aware, no.
Would you like the owner to come
up? Do you have additional information? Then sure. And then Commissioner Cliff.
That was actually my exact question.
I'm not an engineer. I am an architect. It's my opinion that there's no reasonable shoring that could be put up to stop the wall from spreading because of the sheer amount of fill that's against it on the other side. It's possible to do something to keep it from falling too far into another yard, but that has not been done. Basically, the neighbors are aware that the wall's a little shaky and nobody goes and sits under it. But nobody disputes that there's a problem here. Only one person disputes only one person asserts that the entire wall has to be replaced, and that's the owner of 46 Eagle, who wants to keep his raised yard because he has a nice garden, and he wants the neighbors to help pay for his yard, and he's using this NOV as a way to have his neighbors share the cost of his giant wall at $280,000. Again, I am quite happy to work with him constructively to build a low wall at the natural slope and a fence. If he'll remove even some of his fill and terrace his yard back, it's all doable. It's not that we won't cooperate with him. It's just that I don't have half of $280,000. It's not possible. And as was stated, I can't just replace the few inches of wall that encroach on my property because it's a big wall. The whole thing would collapse. So that's the situation I'm in, and it's a little bit Alice in Wonderland-y to me. Thank you.
Are there any more questions from commissioners?
Is there a motion? If no further question.
I think let's talk about this. I mean, none of this feels, this is a really hard one, and none of this feels great. And I completely see where you all are coming from. It's really hard for me to think of, I mean, we don't have, you know, we have to be guided by the rules that are in front of us. And so, I'm not seeing a way for us to vacate this order, but I'm open to hearing what others have to say.
I guess my question would be the state law.
Can speak to the microphone.
The state law that was referenced in terms of assigning who is responsible, would I mean, if the responsibility based on that were assigned to the uphill neighbor, then wouldn't it solely become their responsibility? I can understand the department doesn't have, you know, that jurisdiction to do that, but if they were able to work with their lawyer and get that sorted out, and maybe it's a question for the department, if that were in place to show that the, you know, California state law had responsibility of the uphill neighbor, would that remove the NOV from their property, I think is my question.
If, did you want to say something? I'll say it too. Yeah. As staff is approaching, I would just mention that, so as was mentioned, the relevant law here is the building code. The civil code does contain the provisions that are referenced. It contains a number of other provisions, but the board has to be careful not, the board's jurisdiction is with respect to whether the NOV was properly issued. You know, civil disputes are essentially beyond the jurisdiction of this board, so.
So I think that the, in a different form, I'd actually like to have a conversation about some of the application of our policies when they have an opportunity to be potentially weaponized against neighbors. I do think that this is, I think it's a difficult position to put somebody in to say, we're going to put you in the order of abatement because you're, you know, because of this, of the financial decisions of your neighbor or the financial desires of your neighbor. Obviously we can't, that's beyond our scope, but I do think it is, an uncomfortable place for us to be in. Is there civil litigation between the parties? No. Because usually if there is litigation, we'll intentionally stay out of it. In this case, and there's no timeline given, right? There's been no timeline given for when this will be resolved. Is it expected to be resolved? No. And there's no, is there an order of abatement on the other property? On both properties. I kind of remember this. Yeah, I don't see a way out of it.
Williams. Okay. Well, this is an exceptionally hard case. I think the appellant has presented a strong case for equitable considerations, but at least when it comes to the like prima facie legal components of this case that we're supposed to consider, which is whether the staff made an error in issuing the notice of violation in fact or law, at least with the fact, I mean, that seems to be undisputed that there's an unsafe condition on the property, and since the appellant isn't contesting that it is his property, then that would apply. Then there is the, you know, under Building Code Section 102A, that would be grounds for a nuisance and issuing the notice of violation. So then if we look at the equitable considerations and that, you know, our powers to modify so long as it doesn't affect public health and safety, which I think is paraphrasing, you know, what our authority is here. Well, the modification proposed by the appellant, if I recall correctly, it was that we should modify the order to direct that the uphill neighbor just do it. There's already an order to that effect. And, you know, for us right here sitting on the board, I don't know how we could equitably or even legally, with the uphill neighbor not having their opportunity, like a notice in a hearing today to determine whether they should be solely responsible. I don't know if we could do that. I mean, I think that would create a real due process risk if we were going to just affect their rights without them being here. I guess in, you know, in another equitable consideration, you know, there's, I believe the appellant when he stated that he was unaware that the wall was on his property prior to 1.5 years ago, though I mean, every property owner, you know, every property owner obtains a bundle of rights and a bundle of obligations. So since that wall, who knows how long that wall has been on your property? That's, you know, a fact determination, which is super hard to determine in a one-hour abatement appeals board hearing. I think, you know, either through the title report or, you know, and just any obligation as a property owner to sort of maintain their property, when did that obligation arise for the appellant to know that there was a retaining wall on his property, which creates another, you know, another complication for us. I think, you know, and, you know, even, you know, another legal issue that kind of might come to mind here is, you know, if that wall has been on the appellant's property for 40 years, 50 years, 60 years or something like that, is it still the appellant's property? You know, that's kind of, there's a legal doctrine related to that, which might apply, but I wouldn't want to, in this form, try to address it all. Like, I think where I stand in this is that I don't, there is an unsafe condition, like Commissioner Calamucci stated, that the department needs to address, and I don't, I haven't been persuaded by the appellant that they've given us a tool, like a means by which we can address that through a modification. So I think in civil litigation, if that happens, if the, you know, if the facts as the appellant states them are to be true, I'm sure that the uphill neighbor would be liable, which in which case the appellant would be compensated for all the harm that the uphill neighbor has caused by their dereliction of the property. And, you know, that might be the most prudent way for us to manage this, you know, unless, those are just my thoughts on it. I don't know how else we can handle a case like this, but anyhow, I'll stop.
I think that was my question. I understand, like, the NOV, but I think that was my legal question, which would be if the state law was pursued and it responsibility was assigned to the uphill neighbor, would that resolve the NOV?
Well, if the state law, if liability was pursued in a civil court, then, you know, damages would be awarded to the appellant in this case if he was successful in that suit.
Would that undo our action? Like, in the event, in the event that we uphold the order of abatement and in civil court it is determined not to be the property or the responsibility of, I'm sorry, the appellant, would that then, would they then have an opportunity to reverse our action?
So I don't think this action would be subject to the decision. It would be a subject of, the issue would be who would be liable for the actual repairs in terms of monetary way, right? And so if the appellant wanted to challenge this action, they'd have to take a particular appeal, right, with the court. But that's separate from a civil matter where they're basically saying, you caused us damages, we are suing you. And I suppose they could get declaratory relief as well. It's a little bit outside the scope of my expertise. But in most cases, that's a dispute between the two of them. And it's not necessarily appeal of this order. An appeal of this order would be done via a separate type of.
Yeah, maybe restating, if we were to delay the order of abatement for a period of time to allow them to pursue that avenue of who has responsibility, and if it were to be assigned to that uphill neighbor, would that clear the NOV for this
well,
property?
It certainly could be something that the board could take into consideration, but ultimately that would be a civil law matter as opposed to a matter under the building code, which talks about ownership, property ownership, as opposed to legal responsibility, which can be a different type of standard.
I also would like to point out that that doesn't resolve the unsafe condition that presently exists. And so I think if we were to discuss or pursue something like that, you know, some action could be taken to safe the wall. Like they said, it can't be stopped, but at least to safe it off in some way, to allow it to exist in a way that it is not clear and present danger to, you know, life safety issues. And so in, I mean, taking that into consideration, I think we, you know, our responsibility is to the building code, and there still seems to be an unsafe condition that exists on the site. You seem like you want to say something. Mm-hmm.
So I actually have a different question. We have another meeting that we have to get to, and we have guests here that are ready to speak. Is there an opportunity to, like, what are our options as in the middle of a hearing? We have another appellant ready to go. Can we declare a recess until after the BIC? Can we revisit this? I know, Sonia, I love that look. But I also, like, it seems like there's still a lot on today's agenda, and we're creeping into the BIC. So I just want to also ask the city attorney, what are our options for, you know, for the rest of this meeting and for this item?
Process question. You can grant a continuance for up to 60 days for good cause shown.
I would like to motion to grant a continuance on this item for 60 days. For do I just state a cause?
Yeah. That's correct. You could simply say for a time not to exceed 60 days because the matters are, you know, you're not able to come to a conclusion on complicated issues and need more time to deliberate.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a motion. Is there a second? Second. So there's a motion by Commissioner Alexander to grant the continuance for 60 days. Not to exceed 60 days. And the second by Commissioner McLeese. And I'll do a roll call vote on that motion. Vice President Newman.
No.
Commissioner Alexander Toot.
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese.
Yes.
Commissioner Lee. Commissioner Williams.
Yes.
And Commissioner Calamucci.
No.
Okay. Looks like the motion carries 4-2. Thank you. About the next item, if the appellant is here, I believe we have to hit the next item. Okay. So we are on to item number case. City Attorney's asking, would the board like to allow additional briefing?
Whenever there's
another meeting.
Yeah, it'd be great, and maybe the appellant can come back with an update on what they've done in the meantime and what proposed modification they are requesting.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're on to case number 6962, 1252 Gilman Avenue, complaint number 2024-225-68. Owner of record and appellant, Christopher Wiseman. Action requested by appellant. Appellant appeals the April 8th, 2025 order of abatement and assessment of costs.
Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Mauricio Hernandez. I represent court enforcement for this case at 1252 Gilman Avenue, violation number 2024-22568. The case summary is as follows. The case originated from a telephone complaint received on 4/23/2024, reporting active unpermitted construction activity with the ground floor level of a single dwelling at 1252 Gilman Avenue. The complaint stated that an illegal unit was being built in the garage, including unpermitted electrical work and framing. Field verification by the department confirmed that substantial work without permit, including construction of habitable rooms, ceiling cutouts for recessed lighting, electrical wiring, and installation of alterations of plumbing fixtures. A first notice of violation was issued on 5/2/2024, directing the owner to obtain a required building permit, electrical and plumbing permit, to legalize or remove the unpermitted unit. Following noncompliance with the notice of violation, a final warning letter was issued to refer the case to a director's hearing, which was held on 4/1/2025, where the hearing officer determined the violation remained outstanding and issued an order of abatement. The order of abatement required the owner to obtain all permits within 30 days and comply with all requirements. Staff recommendation is to uphold the order of abatement. The violation remains outstanding. There was a file permit to comply with the notice. However, nothing was done since it was filed. There are some pictures that were taken after the fact, and it seems like the work was actually completed without obtaining the electrical permits or any type of building or plumbing permits. Thank you.
Thank you. The appellant may come forward.
How are you guys doing today? My name is Chris Wiseman, owner of property at 1252 Gilman Avenue. My situation is just, I inherited this problem. Me and my dad started some work on the place with one of his handymans back in 21. He got sick with dementia. He started living with me. He passed away May 28th of 2022. We left the stuff there. The floor just got done. He was doing some lights and stuff like that, putting the fan up because the dad always complained it got hot or whatever. We had no air. And I inherited the property. So the guy that been knowing my dad and working for him, because we also own an apartment building over in Oakland, he just said, you know what, man, your dad passed away. I'll just go ahead and finish this stuff up. And we got rented out the top part and have a disgruntled tenant. I didn't even know nothing about the posting because she crumbled it up and threw it away when she got mad at me. She just said, here's something the city been by here. And they've been looking at stuff downstairs. I'm like, whoa, what's been going on? Didn't know nothing about it until she got mad at me. So then I called, and then I started hearing about everything that's going on. I then hired an architect. They told me to try to make it legal I thought it was legal the whole time. I'm 49 years old. My dad been living there the whole time. I've been going from Fillmore to Hunters Point, going back and forth to my dad's house, thinking it was all legal, nothing's wrong with it. Come to find out that my dad had started something, but he never finished it. So I think it's not legal. I'm not really sure still. I don't understand all this. Man, I hope mine is not as serious as that other case. But I'm just trying to make the place, me and my dad were trying to make it more comfortable for him because he was 88 years old and was just trying to get up the house a little bit to put a little ceiling fans in. And I guess he tried to put some recess lights in and put flooring and that's it. Now, and that's been like that for years. The lighting was already there. The wiring and everything, walls and everything was already years since I've been born. I was born in 1976. So I don't know. I have no history, really. I just know that we were trying to spruce the place up for dad and make it comfortable. He got dementia, got sick. He ended up staying with me. We left it, and here we are. So I hired an architect to come in because they said something about making it an OED or whatever they call it, ADU. Yeah, our architect, he went and did everything, took pictures, whatever. He submitted it with the people downtown. And we were going back and forth to figure out what's the best way to resolve this matter. I'm not trying to not comply and not do what's supposed to be. I didn't know nothing about no permits and stuff like that. Okay, I'm new to all this, so I'm just trying to comply and make it work. And right now, I just was just here, just ask for more time now since I'm more aware of what's going on. And man, listen to that last case, man. I just want to take care of the problem. Dad is not here no more. I'm not selling the property. I just want to be, that's the place where I work in City and County San Francisco. I commute from Lathrop, so I tend to go there sometime and just relax because I work out here. Might stay a couple of days. So, and I want to apologize. The guy did finish the work because I thought my architect was doing some stuff, I guess, down here. And I thought everything was okay. It was just some wires. He just had to put the lights in. And as you can see some pictures, it looks kind of nice, actually. So I'm just asking for some time. I'm dealing with the tenant situation upstairs. The architect has to go upstairs and take pictures and do everything. And I'm dealing with the tenant with Section 8 with that now. So it's like crazy right now. And once again, I inherited this problem. So I hope you guys be a little lenient with me on this. I'm all new to this stuff and trying to get it all taken care of. Best way I possibly know how.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there public comment on this matter? I'm seeing none. Is there staff rebuttal?
No, just like I said, we did find out that there is a permit on file. However, it was only filed, went through intake, nothing else. And then when the inspectors went out there to verify if the work remained the same, I mean, all the openings for the electrical were already fixed and corrected. But again, there is no electrical or building or plumbing permit to do all this work.
Okay. Thank you. Is there an appellate rebuttal?
When you said plumbing, all I know, it was just some paint, some lights put up. No plumbing was done. That whatever plumbing is in there has been there since I was born. I was just trying to spruce the place up, so I don't know what the complaint was, plumbing. There was no extra rooms made. There was no knockdown in the walls. It's clearly two bedrooms down there with one bathroom, a living room, a kitchen, and a dining room. There's no plumbing. Plumbing has always been in place. By the pictures, as you can see, the garage, and there's no rooms being in the garage. It looks like a tandem garage. I think, I'm not sure, but I know my dad used to park his car in there all the time. Has a washer and dryer in the back there. And that's about it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Board discussion. Speak it to the microphone.
Commissioner Calamucci.
Yes. Question for the appellant. So your ask is, regarding additional time to comply. How much time do you feel like you would need to comply? And I guess, what's the plan?
The plan is, from what I'm hearing, is it's not all the way legal. Okay, so what I'm trying to do is make it legal. So I'm getting, I got an architect to go out there and finish it up, to do all the stuff where it's got to be firewalls and stuff, walls, if it's a fire, it's 30 minutes. It's all kind of stuff, really. And I just need time to get all that stuff situated. I don't know how much time they will give me. I don't know how much time you will give me, but I'll take as long as I can get to try to get it situated. I'm in the process of getting the tenant removed from the top part. That'll make it easier because they have to do both. It's labeled as a single dwelling, but it's, from my knowledge of all my life, my uncle used to stay up top, my dad was at the bottom. That's the way I've always known it. So I'm just trying to legalize the bottom, keep the property in the family.
And just a follow-up question, and maybe for the department. So there is a tenant currently there.
There's a tenant up top, which is, nothing's wrong with that.
Okay.
At all, period.
But
they just got a little mad because she heard some noise. Okay. So, and I just said, why you didn't call me? You know what I mean? Because he finished it off because it was like, stuff hanging. It was holes in the walls and stuff. Cause we, like I said, we had stopped because our dad was living with me now because I had to take care of him because he had dementia and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So then when he passed away, the guy said, you know what? I don't want to leave everything out like this. I'll put it all back and put the lights in. I purchased whatever else he needed. Cause like I said, it was just lights, paint, flooring.
Maybe a question for the department. Does the department still believe, I mean, given that we still do have a tenant there, but there has been
Thank you, Mr. Weissman. You can have a seat and we'll have the department come forward.
Does the department believe that are there intimate life safety hazards and risks to that tenant?
So we're understanding that there's no tenant on the ground floor. There is a tenant on the upstairs. I'm not 100% sure if there is actually an unsafe condition at the upper floors. I mean, when there's items done without a permit and not inspected and completed without inspections, like, for example, the lighting that the gentleman's saying. But as you can see in some of the pictures, there was some wiring that at some point somebody was disconnecting or connecting again. There's a possibility that if that person is not a licensed electrician, we don't know how the connections were made. So there is still an unsafe condition per the code because there was no inspections done to verify that these connections were actually done properly.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Would that be an over-the-counter permit typically for the lighting, the additional lighting?
No, because it's an illegal unit. So what they have to do is they have to submit a building permit to legalize the unit, and then they will actually apply for the trades permits, which is the plumbing and electrical permits, because they possibly have to upgrade the panel and probably the plumbing as well.
Got it. Is there any way that this would qualify under ADU amnesty, being that the unit has existed since, you know, I'm not going to assume how old you are, but I'm going to say at least 20 years.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. I mean, like I said, there was a permit filed, but I'm not 100% sure why that permit never went through anywhere.
Okay.
So maybe the architect has more information. Maybe the architect would have been here to answer those questions, because there was, like I said, a permit application filed to legalize the unit. So.
Sorry, Commissioner, were you asking about the 5-year moratorium?
Yeah.
So that's supposed to be built in existence prior to January 1st, 2020. I originally thought this was built in 2021, but it does sound like it's been there for 40 years.
I mean, is there any proof that it's been there that long?
Per the pictures, it is.
Okay.
I think that the question is here, there's two things. There was an illegal unit, but somebody started doing work, like opening up walls and, you know, changing the lighting and stuff like that. You know, maybe they would actually look at the exemptions and say, can I actually do this remodeling, or can I wait to remove the tenant and then get a full permit, do a walkthrough with the inspector, and maybe the inspector would have said, hey, you can't really touch the ground floor, you have to legalize it first, but you can pull out the permits for the upstairs in the meantime.
Commissioner Williams.
Question for the staff. In your estimation, how much
time... Do you want to talk to the mic? Thank you.
Mic's off. In your estimation, how much time does the appellant need to pull the permits and complete the work?
That will be up to the, you know, the routing stages. That's hard to say, because, I mean, we've already processed it on our end, but it's up to the architect to continue working with staff and submitting all the documents. Like I said, at this point, the permit was actually filed last August, but there's no other movement since then.
What's the average amount of time a case like this takes to get the permits and complete the work?
For a legal unit, I mean, I've seen, you know, maybe staff getting the permit issued in 60 days, and then the work, it depends on the contractor, and they're providing a timeline, saying maybe, hey, it's going to take us 6 months to actually get everything to legalize, open the walls, see what I need to upgrade, see any changes. So it's going to be more up to the contractor once the permit is issued, you know, in regards to the timeline of construction.
Okay. Thank you.
But I would say 6 months would be a reasonable time.
Any more questions from commissioners? Is there a motion or discussion?
I am of the opinion that we can modify this order to give the appellant 6 months to complete the work. However we have to word it in the motion.
May I speak?
Mm-hmm.
In the past, you've held orders in abeyance for a certain amount of time, meaning that if they're not completed within 6 months, if you chose 6 months, then the order would be issued?
Yep. So the motion would be in move to put the order in abeyance for 6 months.
Second.
Okay, so there's a motion by Commissioner Williams and a second by Vice President Newman. And I'll do a roll call vote. Vice President Newman?
Yes.
Commissioner Alexander Toot?
Yes.
Commissioner McLeese?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
And Commissioner Calamucci?
Yes.
Okay, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
We need to switch.
Next is item D, general public comment. Members of the public.
No, actually signed in as you because this actually.
Meeting not done, just a moment. Meeting not done yet, but general public comment. Members of the public may address the board on matters that are within the board's jurisdiction and are not on today's agenda. Any general public comment or items not on the agenda? Seeing none, adjournment, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
All commissioners in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We are now adjourned. It is 10:54 a.m. We will take a break for 5 minutes and reconvene as the Building Inspection Commission. Thank you. Thank you.